In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 46 of Land Parties from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. This episode is brought to you by Bet Online. I am your host, Lucas Agin. Joining me, as always, is Ryan Smith. Ryan, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. We're actually up at the in-laws up in Northern Nevada. I am literally in the middle of nowhere right now. That's why my setup is a little different. But it was good, you know, good family, good food. You know, we got to help them, you know, they're moving up here and slowly like building out this house and stuff. So, you know, just being able to come up and be with family and help out, you know, also still it's my family and then, her parents. So, it's nice to get away and kind of get away from electronics in the city and just chill out. It's cold. It's super cold. How was your weekend, my friend?
My weekend was good. Just had Thanksgiving with my parents, so a nice little low-key affair, and helped them cook a little bit, which is always risky when you're asking me to cook, but everything turned out okay, I think, for the most part. Everybody ate everything, so that's a good sign. But we are ready to welcome a very special guest this week. You know him as the voice of Jin Sakai in Ghost of Tsushima. Joining us all the way on the weekend with just some brief time off that he had, Daisuke 2G is joining us. Daisuke, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm having a great time. I'm in London right now. It's my first time being here. So, I was kind of jealous hearing about Thanksgiving. for me, I was thinking like non-existent. Oops, sorry.
You're fine. Sorry,
there's an alarm.
You're fine.
There's an alarm for this actually. So it's very important. I didn't really get to do any Thanksgiving thing, but I'm lucky to be working right now, you know, for an actor. So can't complain.
Fantastic. First of all, some congratulations are in order. Congratulations on your nomination for Best Performance at the Game Awards.
Thank you, Ghost.
You're welcome. And of course, Ghost has seven nominations total, including Best Game. You know, let me start there. How exciting is that for you to be recognized and see this game get as much recognition as it has?
Oh, man, it's just not, you know, I wasn't expecting it. It's very exciting. You know, it's something we all kind of wished. And, you know, even when we're making it, like, you know, the cat, like Somali, who plays Yuna, or she would like joke about, yeah, you can get nominated, stuff like that. I never took it seriously, but now that it's starting to happen, it's very exciting. It's humbling. But we'll see. I don't know. I hope we win because we just had the, I don't know if you want to talk about this. We just had the Golden Joystick Award. We were nominated for five categories and The Last of Us Part II swept, which, you know, they deserve it as well. But I was like, oh, can we get just one of these? Just one of them? I don't know. So,
can I have an award, please?
Can I have an award? Just one, please. We'll take sound. We'll take sound.
Yeah.
You know? So I hope he wins something. I mean, obviously, like, you know, I don't like it when the awards are like being nice and they, you know, give one award to each game or whatever. We don't, obviously, I don't want that, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want one.
You know, I mean, this game has its legions of fans that have just fallen in love with it, and it's easy to see why. It's gorgeous, it's compelling, it's such an emotional story arc there. If you can take me back, what drew you to this role, and how much did you know from the beginning? Because this game's been in development for a while.
So I worked on it for 3 years. I got cast in end of 2016. But you know, when I, somebody asked me this. I just had my first Comic-Con yesterday online.
It
was the MCM and New York Comic-Con online. One of the meet and greets fans asked me the question of, you know, what was it? Yeah, something like that, similar to that question of, you know, why did you audition or something like that? And to be completely honest, the non-romantic answer is like, well, it's, you know, it's a job. Like, I need the money and I need to make a living as an actor. And so, you know, we auditioned for everything. Mm-hmm. What stood out for me with this role is that when I read the description of the character, it's just like, well, it's, you know, I better book this or, you know, because it's I fit the role. Mm-hmm. So it was for me to lose is what I always put it. Like, I'll get it if I do my job correctly. So that's the mindset I went in. Obviously, like, you know, I feel that way about certain roles and then still not get it. But this one, it was the right fit and it was great.
You know, I know that video game roles have been kind of a recent development for you, a recent kind of turn in addition to usually acting the past couple of years here. Mm-hmm. What has your experience been on games? And, you know, I know that you were with like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which is really cool. I used to live up in Oregon. So that's a very cool festival what they do. I love what they do. How did that kind of background lend itself to video games? And was there a different challenge that you had to get used to?
Both. A little bit of both of each thing. Of when you're doing theater, you have to imagine, like when you look out in the audience, sometimes you're looking out in the field of, I don't know, an army of, you know, like you have to imagine, you have to use your imagination. And when you're on the set, on the mocap stage, you have to do something similar of, you know, you're not just in a blank set. You have to imagine that there's, you know, whatever, like a battlefield or so there are similarities, you know, using I have a clown background, so using my body and very specific facial expressions to tell a story, all of that lend itself to mocap acting, I think. Specificity is one of the things one of my mantras, so it's that's what I work when I look at the script. Whenever I get it, I try to figure out what the story needs, what the storytelling is, and So that was and what was the other question? Was the challenge, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Like, how was it different? Oh, just the suit and the head. You know, like there's all these. I mean, when you're in the theater, at least, and when you're doing TV or something, like you have the costumes and, you know, what you're supposed to be, what you're, mm-hmm. you know, what the characters were supposed to be wearing. And with mocap, it's not that. You're wearing a big old camera helmet thing and, you know, a bodysuit. But for me, it was, I try to use everything that I can. And I just imagined that the suit was my armor. Because the armor, the Japanese armor is really heavy. And the suit is really tight. So, you know, it wasn't that far out of the imagination. And also the even though Jin Sakai doesn't wear a helmet, you know, samurais wore helmets. And they did have, like, we call it antlers with the cameras. So, you know, and samurai helmets also have, like, antlers and stuff. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was, I used that. And it kind of also helped my posture, I think, a little bit, because samurais probably had really good postures. I assume. Yeah, I'm sure they did.
As far as the character, like, how much did you relate to the character? And, you know, what kind of, like, quirks did you kind of incorporate that you found similar?
Yeah. Well, so I'll answer the quirk thing, and then you have to remind me the previous question. So one of the quirks, I was watching, I believe, Yojimbo, which is a Kurosawa film. And I think Nate brought it up. Nate Fox, the director, and I was kind of chatting about mannerisms, I think, like that. And so And in Yojimbo, he does this thing, and I basically stole it from him, from Mifune. But in the movie, he does this thing. What does he do? Oh, he just, it's just like a shoulder thing. Like he's a little bit annoyed, and he does it whenever, it seemed like he did it whenever somebody looked up to him as a hero. It's kind of like he feels uncomfortable in that role. And so, yeah, we came up with one thing with the arm, like he's a little wound up too tight, you know, and he has to let go. And I kind of thought about the background with Lord Shimura about, you know, what does he say? Don't feel your emotions or no, don't surrender to your emotions, something like that. I'm not very good at like remembering things. I remember my lines for the session, and then I forget everything. But anyway, so yeah, it was my way of like, there's this something, that deep hidden anger, maybe connected to his, you know, how his father died. And yeah, so I just imagined he had this like chip on his shoulders, and Lord Shimura would like always correct him, like, relax, or, you know, don't, you know, your right arm is like too tight or whatever. And so this is like his reminder. It's funny because they, and this is something about, you know, compared to video games and movies, that in video games, you can't really control when that happens, because they added it. They just put it as one of his quirks. And if you play it, you realize, you see it, I don't know when, it just happens randomly from time to time. He just shrugs his arm. Which is really cool, though, because that's something that I came up with Nate, and then it showed up in a game. And not just in the scenes, you know? Yeah, in the game, yeah. So that was really cool. What was the question that you asked before that, before the quirk?
I was asking too, and I kind of want to switch it up though real quick, because I wanted to see then, because for me personally, I have not played the game. I was waiting for PS5 to drop so I could play it on the PS5. So I know, and I don't know if you've played it or not, or as far as the story, but what can I expect as somebody that I've kind of been blind on it, and I've done it intentionally, just, you know what I mean? So I can fully, because I like to fully get into a game. And that game is absolutely gorgeous. What can I expect as somebody just coming in blind?
What can you expect? Oh, you want me to sell the game? you know, just imagine that you're a samurai and you get to explore. You know, get to immerse yourself in this beautiful island of Tsushima, this feudal Japan, and yeah, just it's a fantasy, right? Like. You get to live that fantasy, and Sucker Punch have done a very good job of, you know, trying to recreate, you know, year 1274 Japan, and I think the best way to enjoy it really is to let the island guide you, and not, you know, because I think with open world games you can get stuck with the map. Right. And trying to find the next collectible, which I don't mind per se, but it can be a hindrance to your enjoyment, because you're just constantly not immersing in the world, but immersing on the map and the stuff you need to collect. So, right. Yeah. So Ghost of Tsushima, you know, the map isn't always there. So you just there's the, we call it the Papa Wind. You'll understand the reference once you play it. The wind guides you to your next spot. So, and also, if you just look at the world, you know, smoke coming out of a town, whatever. If you just go there, you just know that there's a mission or something. So, yeah, that's a. It's a very good game. And also Legends, which is another game of the co-op, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a whole, it just feels like a different game. And I'm playing it, and I also really enjoy it. So, yeah, I recommend it. Game of the year.
You know, it is such an emotional story. Like it's quick to fall in love with, and then it takes you in some unexpected places that just deepens that connection. And I know that, you know, when you're working on a project, is there a point that you start to think, oh, hey, this project could be something pretty special? Or is that something that you don't really get a sense of until the finished product's kind of out there in the world?
Well, I thought it was special because of the Asian American aspect of it, that they hired all Asian American actors for this video game. And there hasn't been, you know, many of that that's made by an American company, right? The AAA American company. So that was exciting. And so, you know, my fellow cast members thought it was going to be special in that way. But it wasn't until the trailers came out that it didn't really hit me. Also because I wasn't that big of a gamer back then. Uh-huh. When I started, so, and I'm still like learning a lot. So I didn't know anything about Sucker Punch and Billy Harper before the first trailer came out. I think he was showing me clips of what they were working on with the trailer. And he was telling me like, okay, so the Sucker Punch logo is going to come last. And if you watch, that's what happens, I think. Because, and he was like, oh, because we're kind of a big deal. So I didn't know. So if you watch the trailer, it's all about, you know, you get to see Japan. It's like, oh, cool. It's a Japanese open world game. And then at the very end, it's Sucker Punch. And it's like, oh, they've been working on this game. Because, you know, there are a lot of Infamous fans still out there. So I didn't know anything about that. So when the first trailer came out and to see the reaction of the fans, it was very exciting. And the trailer was just even more beautiful than I imagined it was going to be. So, yeah, that's about the time I thought it was going to be something special. You know, when you're working on it, like, you can't really think about how big it's going to be, you know? But yes, to see parts of what they were working on was, you can kind of tell that it's going to be exciting. Although I was, you know, before the game came out, I was still a little nervous, but it turned out okay.
What is that feeling like? Like when the game's being released and now all that pent up excitement and all the fans are like itching to get their hands on it. But then there's that moment when they're just diving in that you're not sure if it's going to hit home like you guys hope it will. What's that timeline like?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. So the reviews come first. Mm-hmm. That didn't help me at all because there was a bit of a difference between, you know, the reviewers and the critics and the players. The players overwhelmingly liked it more than, you know, they weren't bad,
right?
But we wanted it to be better. And if we get the chance to do it again, like I was that. So the reviews came out on like Tuesday, and the game came out Thursday night, right? Mm-hmm. And that Tuesday to Thursday was really emotional. I remember I had to get out of the house. So I had to went shopping, grocery shopping, and in the car, I almost cried. I'm not sure. I forget if I cried or not. But yeah, because, you know, it's like, because you work so hard on it,
right?
For 3 years, and not just me, but the people, you know, the people I work with, they worked even harder and much longer. You know, hours and hours and hours into this one project. And, you know, when the critics aren't giving 90 whatever points on Metacritic, you know, it's like, oh, like what could we have done better? What happened? You know, these, and also like, we can't expect games to have sequels or whatever, you know? But we hope, I hope that there's more of Ghost of Tsushima. But when the reviews came out, so I was like, oh, this is like, I'm done. Like, no one's going to like me. I'm never going to get hired again. All this stuff went through my head. And also, like, if I get the chance to do it again, like, I would work so hard. And, and, you know, I'll show them But then the game came out, and then after that, the fans showed up, and they let us know what they thought about the game, and then it felt great, and it still feels great.
Let me ask, then, how do you balance that? Because I hear actors talk about that balance between taking what critics are saying and taking what fans are saying, and there's a lot of times where those two voices don't match. So how did that help? What did you learn about kind of balancing what the fans say? You know, the fans are saying that they're in love with the game, and critics that say we like it, but not to that level of what you're hearing from fans.
You know, I'm not supposed to care, but I do. Mm-hmm. I try not to, and I try not to read reviews. I say try because I guess I do, you know, I can't help it. Reviews are never good, but I can't help it. It's there. And people show me, and, you know, sometimes the review is like, they like the game, but the actor playing main character is like, eh. You know, it's like, that happened to me. I think my parents was like, read this one. This one's good. It's like, okay. It's like, the actor, meh. It's like, oh, great.
Your parents showed you that one?
I can't remember.
Why would he do it? What would he do to me?
It was probably not my parents. But, you know, they probably, like, whoever sent it to me, they probably read the title and maybe the first paragraph.
Right. You know?
I don't know. I'm still learning how to navigate that, to be honest. Because also, like, what do you do with if the fans don't like it, you know? Especially with sequels too. Like, again, I don't know if there's going to be a sequel, but the thing about sequels is, like, obviously I'm kind of referring to another game, but I'm not going to get into that. But the challenging thing about sequels is that people love the first one so much that the expectation, not just the quality of the game, but what they want the story to be or what they expect the characters to be is so, you know, they're so passionate that it can lead to hate. It can lead to love, but it can also lead to hate because they hate it because they love it so much. And how do you deal with that? I don't know. I hope I don't have to deal with it, but I'd like to think that if something like that ever happens to me, I can just be like, yeah, well, we did the best we could. And there's still something to be learned from or something to take. That's really the best, the only thing we can do with any kind of criticism. You know, the guys at Sucker Punch, like Nate and Billy, like, they welcome feedback. I commend them for it. I think that's very brave. But they actually do, like, with their patches and things, with Ghost, they've made adjustments to the game with New Game Plus and all that. So, they can do that. And it's harder for an actor because I can't really go in there and fix my performance. But all I can do is to learn from it and do better next time.
Speaking of next time, since you mentioned possible sequel, if you had the chance to come back, is there an area of your character that you'd like to explore that you didn't get a chance to explore in this first game?
Yeah, again, I have to say, like, I don't know if there's going to be
a... Of course. Like, hypothetically speaking.
I don't want to get my hopes up and then not happen. To be honest, there were some scenes that were shot with the first one that didn't end up in the game, or they kind of... Well, I can't really talk about it, but basically the backstory. One of the reasons why I like Yuriko's... side mission is that you get to learn a lot about his Jin Sakai's background, his past with his mom and his dad. And that's the actors, you know, we like coming up with the backstory. So anything that kind of explores that is a lot of fun for me. So maybe, but that's more like a DLC, if anything. I don't know. But yeah, there's that. And also I want to explore how bad he Breaking Bad, like, because the first game is basically an origin story of the Ghost. And so to see how bad he can get might be very interesting to me and see if he becomes, you know, the villain, if he, you know, if he stays a hero, or does he become uncontrollable killing beast? I don't know. But I feel like that's something to explore.
Let me ask you real quick. You said you're newer to gaming. What series do you kind of enjoy playing? I don't know if you're just playing on console. Do you play on PC? What are some of your favorite titles?
Yeah, I love talking about that. So I own a PlayStation. I just got my PlayStation 5.
Hi.
My first game was... Did you get one already?
I did. Oh, I got out day one. Out the day one. Good.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Ghost of Tsushima looks beautiful in that. So my first game was Miles Morales on PlayStation 5. I just finished it and I streamed it on Twitch. It was a lot of fun. And I got to say, I do enjoy that. I played the first Marvel Spider-Man. That was really fun. And Miles was great. It was shorter, and I thought I was going to, complain about that, but it was really a great length. It was a really great story. Being able to swing around New York, you can't beat that. It's amazing. But yeah, I'm a PlayStation fan. Nothing against PC or Xbox or whatever, but or Nintendo. It just keeps it simple for me. Like, if I had that option, if I have other options, there's enough games on PlayStation. Like, I can't do more. but I'm a big fan of PlayStation and all their exclusives. And I'm really not just saying that because I'm in one of them. They're actually really good games. God of War, The Last of Us, Horizon Zero Dawn. And I gotta say, I'm looking forward to all of them. I don't know if there's going to be a part 3 of The Last of Us, but Horizon Zero Dawn is probably I'm most excited about the second one, especially because we still don't know all the story of that evil machine virus thing. So yeah, so can't wait for that one. I'd say that's my favorite.
Nice. And I know that as an actor that you just are trying to get the breadth of work that you can handle. But in an ideal world, where do you see gaming roles kind of fitting in? Is this something that you want to mix in regularly? Or is this something that was kind of, you tried, you had fun, but want to get back to like theater or film or anything like that?
I've been lucky to be able to have done a lot of different things. Like, I've been part of circus, not as, like a circus performer. I was more of an actor in that, but, to have done that, to have done Shakespeare, theater and some TV. I still haven't done film, so I do want to get into that world as well as more TV. But, man, I love video games. I love voiceover. I know I can be better. I look at guys like Troy Baker and, Laura Bailey and how much they work and the level of work that they do is like, that's something to look up to and something to work towards. And, you just think about the work, like right now, this TV is just starting up, all because of Corona, but voiceover has been, working pretty steadily with home studios and everything. But yeah, just from a financial standpoint, it's just smart to just keep doing more voiceovers. And that includes video games. But anyway, I started gaming on Twitch. I started with Ghost of Tsushima. And so it's really become part of my identity as an actor, because streaming is also feels like a performance as well. And so I think video games is going to be a part of my career going forward. And yeah, I got some projects. I have two that are very exciting, and I can't talk about it because it's that exciting. So yeah, so you have two projects, both video games that you know. Next time I'm on your show or whatever, like you can ask about those.
Oh man, yeah, we can't wait.
Yeah. How are you liking streaming on Twitch and like building a community and seeing, you know, these people come together on Twitch? How's that experience been?
Yeah, so it's been great. I started out, with Ghost of Tsushima. I thought I was just going to show it to my parents, and there were, you know, a bunch of people started following me. I was like, what? Like, why are you still watching? I don't know. So it was really shocking at first, but then, you know, once I got used to it, I was kind of like, okay, I'm the show. Like, this is the, you know, me, you know, reacting to the video game and chatting with the chat. It's a show. So once I figured that out, it kind of clicked in my brain like, oh, this is kind of like an improv game. It's kind of and I've done that with clowning, where in a class, I was put in front of the class alone on stage and, you know, said, you know, just do something entertaining. And I felt like I was pretty good at like coming up with a game out of nothing. And so I felt like, oh, maybe this is where that training comes in handy. You know, I can use that. It's become a lot of fun. You know, sometimes it's hard when there's nothing happening in the game or whatever. It's like, it's hard. And I'm still like kind of, it's befuddling to think that people, you know, right now it's like 100 people or whatever, like watching me. It's like, that's still 100 people. That's a lot of people watching me. Play video games. It's mind-boggling. It's also, you know, some people do this as a job. So it's starting to be, you know, I have my team of moderators and we have weekly meetings. I have a meeting after this, I believe. So it's become its own, you know, its channel. It's become its own business, it feels like, which is not something I expected at all. But at the same time, you know, I'm watching YouTube videos of how to make your stream better and stuff like that. And I am trying, like every stream, I try to, you know, make some tweaks. And once it's become that, it's kind of fun because it's like your own channel that you can make it better every time and have fun with it, you know? So yeah, it's really interesting. It's very unexpected. And also, fun fact, yesterday, pretty much, I had 39 meet and greets at the Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And pretty much all of them, maybe except like two people, have been watching me on Twitch. And so had I not been doing that, yeah, so had I not been streaming, how many people would have come to my meet and greet at Comic-Con? I don't know. It might have been a really sad affair, you know? Like, nobody showed up. Like, nobody cared about it. It's like, I was like, who cares? Good game, but the actor, whatever.
You know, was there a particular scene that stood out to you as either the one you felt that you just nailed it or the one that was most challenging to you? Either way, you want to take that?
Sadly, I don't think I've ever felt like I nailed it. Oh man, I don't know what that says about me, but yeah, every time it's like, it's good. If anything, the scene with Ryuzo at the very end of Act Two, where this is kind of spoilers, but this is leading up to the fight. So every scene we do like 10 takes or something like that, like a lot. And then at the very end, Nate says, do whatever you feel like doing. And so that take, because we knew the scene so well, we just kind of played and we were just more aggressive, or he was much more aggressive towards me. Mm-hmm. And it felt great. It worked, you know? So that felt like, that was very exciting because we got the shot, but then we wanted to like, let's try this, you know, something. Let's just try it and see what happens. And it worked very well. What was the other question?
Cool.
Was there a scene that you found most challenging or that you had to kind of really work to get a good handle on?
There's another spoiler, probably. Probably the very last scene. Any scene that requires like a lot of like, not that Jin is like the crying type, but like for me, like crying is very hard for me. So, you know, anything with high emotional stakes, it's really hard because it's, again, you're on a set with nothing. So you just really have to focus on just the relationship and the other actor. So, those scenes are very hard for me. Like I'm very good with technical stuff, you know, mm-hmm. With movement and again, specificity, but then the raw emotion stuff, like I have to throw all of that away in order to get to that place, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like going against what I'm good at and still hopefully be able to do. I'm still doing both, right? Of like what we rehearsed, but also just be in the moment and all that stuff. So yeah, that's sometimes challenging for me because I get so used to doing it a certain way, and then trying to live in the moment is can be challenging.
You know, we always like to ask, there's a lot of aspiring actors out there, right? But I think this is one of those professions that can be really daunting, especially at first. You know, you can, it's easy to get overwhelmed. I think a lot of times people don't even know where to start or how to start. What would your advice to be to that aspiring actor out there?
Aspiring actor, that's just any actor, not just VO.
Let's do VO. Yeah.
Okay. Voiceover. Well, I started voiceover after, you know, establishing myself as mostly theater and some TV actor. So for me, it was just a matter of taking classes and making a good reel. That's important. And then the reel you submit to agents. Hopefully you have some friends that can refer you. And eventually you'll get an agent, and then you go out to auditions. So, you know, it's not cheap unless you can really fake a really good reel. What was taught to me is that the reel has to sound professional. Like it has to sound like you're already working, right? Because agents won't sign you unless you're going to make them money. Mm-hmm. So it's just, but as long as your reel sounds professional and it sounds like, oh, he's booked some, you know, commercials, as long as it's not like McDonald's or something that's really big and it's obviously not, you know, that you did, this is something made up, right? Then that's not good. You don't do that. But, you know, some random product that you're selling, that you wrote and it sounds professional and you sound great, then you can sign it with an agent. So real agent auditions, and then a bunch of auditions, and then maybe some of them you'll get. And then, I've been told that like at first it'll be commercials and then other things like, you know, cartoons and all that. I did not take that route, obviously. I haven't done a whole lot of commercials, very little cartoons. Hopefully I'll get more of that. But yeah, video game, well, Ghost of Tsushima was interesting because it wasn't VO. It was actually through my theatrical agent because of the mocap aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a very technical answer, but yeah.
No, we know that you're taking your time. You've got meetings. You got things to do. Where can we find you online? What should we look for next coming from you?
Oh, okay. You can find me. I have a website, daisuketsuji.com. If you can spell my name. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and you can watch me on Twitch, twitch.tv/ Daisuke Tsuji, which is dice, they're like roll the dice, K to the number G. And I say all of that, like I update all of that very often. I'm terrible. I'm terrible at social media. I'm just being honest. I don't have the time. I just don't have the patience.
It's a job in itself. It's a job in itself, for real.
It is a job in itself. Yeah, if I get rich enough to hire an assistant, that's what's next for me. No, I don't think it'll be a while. It'll be a while until I need an assistant. But yeah, things coming up. I'm working on a TV show right now, which I don't think I can talk about. The project has been announced, but the casting hasn't, I think, but soon. So look out for something for TV. I'm working on video games, but again, also the thing about this job is that I always like to say anything is possible. Anything is possible. Nothing is something. I can't remember right now. It's hard for me to remember when I'm put on the spot. It's a motto that I always say and I can't remember it. But yeah, anything is possible. Nothing is it's kind of like nothing is guaranteed, but I don't usually say guaranteed, which is to say that I said I have two video games coming out. That's very exciting. Who knows if I'll get replaced? I might get replaced if somehow my voice like, oh, maybe this, maybe it's not the right fit. They'll go with somebody else. I've seen it happen. It might have happened to me. I was working on a cartoon. I worked for one day. I don't think I gelled well with the director. And they said that it's like, okay, this is kind of a recurring role. They haven't called me back. So unless they, there was a hold on their production, it's like, they probably didn't want me back. Which is like, and that's why I say about like, anything is possible. Nothing is guaranteed or whatever. In that, you can be the main character in a video game and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But that video game might not have a sequel. That video game might have a sequel, but Jin Sakai might not be the main character. But he might not even, not even in it. It's all possible. So that's the mindset that you have to have. That's another thing, advice I would have to, actors starting out is that there are good times and there are, bad times. And right. But you got to take it in strides and you got to enjoy the journey, both the ups and the downs. So anything's possible, both good and the bad.
Absolutely. Daisuke, again, thank you so much for joining us. We are going to be right back. Let's take a quick commercial break.
2020 has already reshaped how we work. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visit Indeed each month, according to ComScore total visits. So it's clear Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for listening to those short messages, and thanks again to Dice K. Ryan, I think that was one of the more entertaining interviews we've had.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, again, they are going to win. I'm sending all the good vibes for that dub here at the Game Awards show coming up. So that was just such a fun interview. That was so much fun.
Speaking of strong video game performances, Sandra Saad, who you might know as Kamala Khan in Marvel's Avengers, who we, of course, had on a couple months ago now, yes, won Best Performer at the Golden Joystick Awards. And Ryan, we both agree that the campaign itself is pretty strong, and Sandra's performance was a heck of a performance in that game.
It was so much fun. I mean, she brought the character of Kamala Khan to life. She's such a fun personality. I don't know if you guys checked out the episode that she was on here, but she is a blast to just talk to and puts out so much good energy. This isn't surprising because she really was such a bright beacon within the campaign to her being the main character. You know what I mean? I think this is well-earned and well-deserved. Congratulations, Sandra, on that golden joystick.
Yeah, to this day, I cannot fathom why they delayed marketing her as the main character. Like, that should have been front and center from the beginning, and I think that would have helped change the narrative about that game a little bit.
I agree. Well, you got to think too, man. Like, she is in a part of a cast, you know, Nolan North, Troy Baker, Bailey Willingham. You know what I mean? Like, these are all, you know what I mean, triple A voice actors that have done so much work. So to come in working with the cast like that, you know, that I can only imagine that just raises, you know, that ups your game and ups your level of, you know what I mean? And I think that really showed within the performance, and yeah, dude, what a cast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Glad to see her get some recognition. Clearly she has a bright future ahead of her, and it'll be exciting to see that. And before we go, Ryan, I just wanted to touch on a little bit of a different topic for us. And I wanted to chat about virtual reality, and I did receive a Quest 2, and just wanted to share some initial impressions and see where you are on VR. First,
lay it on me.
First, price point is awesome, right? VR has had, that's been maybe the biggest hurdle, right? VR headsets are not cheap. And then most of them require a gaming PC or a PS, a PlayStation. So like the cost of admission is sometimes astronomically high for the vast majority of people. So to get a headset at $299, huge, genius decision right there, right? You have to approach it from a price point that people can afford. Otherwise, who's going to adopt it, right? Who's going to adopt it if it costs you $1,000+ to actually buy in fully? So that's great. I just think right now, I do not see many AAA games that like justify VR as a gaming platform. I'm going to be honest. Half-Life Alyx, yes, of course. That's like the one shining example. Beat Saber, obviously a lot of fun. But what VR, I think, needs to thrive now is you need fully fleshed out experiences, knowing that they're never going to be as long, at least right now, as your traditional games. But you need those huge blockbuster titles. Otherwise, it's kind of a fun piece of tech. I do have fun with it. But long term, I think they need a game plan here on how to bring fully fleshed out experiences rather than what seems like sometimes tech demos.
Yeah, and I've always been on the fence about VR. VR really started getting pushed around when they were doing 3D TVs, and I was like, there's no way 3D TVs is going to thrive because it absolutely destroys your eyes. It's not a comfortable way of viewing. It's fun in spurts, you know what I mean? Now, I believe that VR has definitely gotten better since that time. But again, my biggest thing with that has always been there's nobody producing content for that platform. Therefore, you know what I mean? Now they've gotten the headsets at least to a more consumer-friendly level, but there's no content for it. So there really is no big, hey, let me put this money or let me invest in this without the content because there's not a lot I can play. Like you said, they feel more like tech demos than anything other than like Alex, you know what I mean? And you may start seeing people because what we have seen is that augmented reality has really starting to catch on and stuff like that. So I think as they're building more options and they see it as a more viable platform, I think that's when we'll start seeing more fully fledged out games that were built specifically for VR. And then they could have some, you know, hey, they could also build in the fact that it's not, you know what I mean, for not VR or just for, you know, normal platforms and whatnot. But I'm wondering, you know, that makes me think about Alex and how they didn't even build out, you know, one for PC or for just like consoles or PC or whatever. It's strictly for in VR. You know what I mean? I imagine that then, you know, maybe building out both versions presents its own set of challenges.
Yeah, totally agree. And I will say this, I don't want to sound like I'm totally stepping all over that industry. They have made improvements, like the screen door effect is kind of, is almost gone. Like it's there, but now the difference is you have to like look for it to notice it rather than that screen door effect being like in your face and easily noticeable. So that's good. I don't even think like, so the Quest 2 has about 2 hours of battery life. I don't even think that's a big deal because right now I don't like you said, you take VR in short spurts. So I don't, there's not that compelling reason to have a marathon session, and comfort is still an issue anyway. So I don't even know that you could do a marathon session, even if you wanted to. They have to figure that out because your head just gets so hot playing that for too long, especially a game like Beat Saber when you're starting to move around a little bit. Oh my goodness, terrible.
Yeah.
But so it's interesting. VR is an industry that I think is starting to figure out the accessibility problem from a cost standpoint. But now if they're going to survive long term as a viable thing that gets mainstream, the games have to follow. And they have to follow, I think, relatively soon.
Yeah, I agree. For it to be, you know, again, I mean, I always feel like nobody has fully jumped into that space just because, you know, again, I don't think it's at that point where it's a viable platform that people are going to be able to or people want to jump onto. Can it get there? Absolutely. You know, like you said, the technology, things are changing. They're making it more consumer friendly, both on the pricing side, as well as, you know, there's still issues within the hardware and, you know, like you're saying, your head's getting hot and stuff like that. So those are things that they'll address and continue to build. I'm curious is if anything, it's definitely something that at least they're putting money into and they're exploring and making it better and trying to make it a viable gaming experience. You know what I mean? And what's the best way to do that?
Right. And, you know, it's funny because I always think of when I think of VR, I think of things like Sword Art Online or Ready Player One. If we ever get to that point, I mean, if we're awesome. Going to swing big on VR, that would be awesome to get there, right?
Yes. That's what I want. That's what I'm looking forward to VR experience. I want a full immersion. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yo, what do you got going on this weekend, my friend?
Not much. You know, I'm dreading the work week after a long Thanksgiving weekend. So this weekend, I might need to recover from Thanksgiving weekend still. So probably a lazy weekend for me. What about yourself?
That's exactly right. I'm going to continue my gameplay of Spooderman and just chill out and then look to get back to doing things the week after and whatnot. So kind of relax a little bit afterward. But yes, thank you guys so much for joining us here on LAN Parties. We hope you guys have a great rest of your week. And you know what it is. We love your faces. We'll be right back.